something.
The Senate will please come to order. The clerk will please call the roll.
Atkinson. Atkinson. Bates. Bates. Bonamici. Bonamici. Boquist. Boquist. Burdick. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. George. Girard. Haas. Haas. Johnson. Johnson. Cruz. Cruz. Metzger. Metzger. Montez Anderson. Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przonsky, Przonsky, Rosenbaum, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Telfer, Berger, Berger, Walker, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Winters, President Courtney.
a quorum being present, we will post the colors. Now listen, this is what we're going to do. I want everyone to pay attention so we don't make a mistake here. The Oregon State University ROTC color guard will come forward. They will stand at attention up here, and when they drop the Oregon flag, I'm going to start the Pledge of Allegiance. Then they will place the two flags here at either side, and then they will move back to the back chambers. So that's a little different than what we're used to. And then after we do that, we will do some more things I'll talk to you about. Please post the colors. I want to thank the Oregon State University ROTC cadets for posting the colors here today. It's our Senate session on April 21st, Oregon State University Day. The cadets are William Day, Jason Long, David Parton, and Eric Bain. Our invocation today is by the Honorable Charles Tomlinson. He is the mayor of Corvallis, one of the great cities in Oregon, and also the home of the Oregon State University. Mayor Tomlinson, please.
Let us take a moment to reflect on our benefits. Gracious Lord, we pause this morning during our busy schedules to take a moment and reflect on the work of the Oregon Senate. First, as a body, our requests. We ask for discernment in our deliberations with our colleagues. We ask for patience and understanding as we listen to those who come before us. We ask for compassion for those less fortunate than us. We ask for guidance and clear vision as we look to Oregon's future. And second, as a body, our celebrations. We represent Oregon, a wonderful state full of natural beauty and populated by your kind and caring people. We serve you and our citizens with respect and dignity. We offer thanks for our staff as they assist us in our work. We are privileged to be called Oregon senators, striving to be thoughtful elected leaders of goodwill. And lastly, we offer our thanks to you for walking with us as the Oregon Senate works together to carry out the work of all Oregonians. Amen.
Thank you very much, Mayor Tomlinson, for your invitation. Again, thank you, Oregon State University, ROTC, Color Guard, for your posting of the colors. And now, we have a special treat here in the gallery to the north. The Oregon State University Chamber Choir will sing Desh An India Raja. And this is a 47 choir member. They're here with us on the second floor, as I said, on our gallery. The music was arranged by Ethan Sperry, and if I mispronounce anything, I'm sure the quality of their singing will overshadow it very soon. So please, the Oregon State University Chamber Choir. Thank you. I'd like to thank all the members of the Oregon State University Chamber Choir and their director, Ethan Sperry. Great job. Really well done. Now our session will be successful. Thank you very much. We needed that uplift. So thanks for coming today, too. I'd like to extend the official welcome of the Oregon State Senate to each and every one of you. With that, I also want to extend a welcome on behalf of the Oregon State Senate to all individuals here today from Oregon State University, the students, the faculty, the staff, the administration, as well as alums. It is an honor and privilege when Oregon State does come to your capital, our capital, to be with us and to show the colors. Oregon State University is one of the great institutions of higher learning, not only in Oregon, but also in the country. So it's a privilege when the Beavers come here today. I was there on Sunday. I was down in your baseball stadium, watched the Beavers take on and defeat the Trojans from USC. And anytime SC gets defeated by Oregon State or Oregon, I am at least able for a few weeks to feel good about life. So, well done, Beavers, and the official welcome on behalf of the Oregon State Senate to each and every Beaver that's here today. Thank you. The honorary pages today, Indian Messia, Terry Schmidt, Shaden Mercino, Kendall Strickland, Tyler Mitchell, and Joanne Jesse, they are the honorary pages for Senator Jason Atkinson. I'd like to extend the courtesies to each and every one of you pages. You make our life much easier by coming here and working with us throughout the day and providing us much-needed services. It's your state capital. You're the future of our state. So thank you, each of you, for being willing to share one of your days with us here at the state capital. Any more courtesies? Recognize Senator Gerard.
Thank you, Mr. President. I ask you to extend courtesies of the Senate to my guest, Kyle Bjornstad. Kyle is a senior at Oregon State and has an interest in coaching and politics and graduated from Marist High School. This year, Kyle played point guard and helped the Beavers to victory at the College Basketball Invitational held in El Paso, Texas.
Recognize Senator Dave Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think they're still up in the balcony. I have a group of high school students from Cove, and I would ask that the Senate please extend courtesies to them. It's probably about a 300-mile drive down, and they're down here just trying to figure out what's going on in this session.
Thank you. Cove, in the back there, thank you for coming all the way to your state capital. It's an honor and privilege to have you here. We hope you have a good day and you'll stay and come back and see us again. So I'd like to extend the courtesy of the Senate to each and every one of you. Thank you very much for being here. Recognize Senator Brian Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. President. I, too, would like the Senate to extend courtesies to Andrea and to Seth. Andrea is to my right, and Seth is in the blue. If you'll stand up, Seth, to the right over there. They are shouting to me today from the 4-H Club over in Yamhill County, which, of course, is affiliated with the Oregon State University Extension Service.
Thank you. Before we go on, I'd like to acknowledge Senator Dave Nelson Cove. They are the Leopards. You are the Leopards. And I love that mascot, the Leopards. I think they're the only Leopards in the state. There's a number of Bulldogs, but there's only one Leopards, and it's the Cove. Cove Leopards. Recognize Senator Richard Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I would like to ask the Senate to extend courtesies to the Senate Majority Office's intern, Brandon Peterson. Brandon is currently a political major in his junior year at Willamette University. As the son of a commercial fisherman, he grew up in the small coastal communities of Oregon. In 2004, he served as a United States Senate page in the U.S. Capitol, where he worked directly for members of Congress during the 108th Congress and was able to witness the 204th election. He is dedicated to public service and has volunteered thousands of hours in the areas of substance abuse prevention, law enforcement, and community organizations. After graduation, Brandon plans to pursue careers in public service in both law enforcement and politics. In the Senate Majority Office, Brandon serves as our communication intern and has been a driving force behind the design of electronic communications and a new caucus website. Mr. President, please extend courtesies of the Senate to Brandon Peterson.
Thank you, Brandon. I'd like to extend the courtesy of the State Senate to you. Welcome to State Senate and welcome to the Majority Office. I'm sure you will provide much needed services. It's an honor and privilege to have you here. Recognize Senator Frank Morris.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm honored to have a guest with me today, Dawn Marie Gade. She is a graduate student at Oregon State University in pursuing a Master of Public Policy, and she will graduate in June. And interestingly enough, her focus of her thesis is the impact of the loss of federal forest funds for select counties in our state and its impacts on those communities. So, Mr. President, I would appreciate extending courtesies to my guest, Dawn Marie Gade. Thank you.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, seated at my desk is Courtney Walton, who is here from Oregon State today. Courtney is a senior majoring in international ecotourism and has already attended a bill signing ceremony, and so please join me in extending courtesies and welcoming him to the Capitol.
Thank you. Further courtesies? Once again, for the record, I already have extended an official courtesy to the Oregon State Senate to every individual here on the floor as well as in this building that is from Oregon State. This is Oregon State Day. It's a good day. It's a great day. Anytime Oregon State comes to our Capitol, it's a great day. Under remonstrances, recognize Senator Rod Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. President. 50 years ago today, Governor Mark Hatfield signed the law enacted by the Oregon legislature creating the very first community college districts in this state. Before that time, adult education, to the extent it existed at all, was offered in high schools. Today, there are 17 public community colleges reaching every part of our state. They provide technical training and college education to more than 350,000 Oregonians. Our community colleges provide powerful solutions for those seeking job skills, transferable college credits, and adult basic education in English, mathematics, and writing. They also offer a hand up to anyone with the drive and the persistence to reach their goals. I have provided profiles of some of the great success stories of students who are in our college today, and you'll find them on your desk. I commend the stories to your attention as they highlight Oregon's best resource, its people. Please join me in wishing our community colleges a happy 50th birthday.
Recognize Senator Jason Atkinson.
Mr. President, return to the order of courtesies, please.
Without objection, please feel free to do so.
Mr. President, thank you very much. I apologize for my tardiness this morning, but I will say that students from one of my favorite cities in all of Oregon are here as honorary pages, and they are here from the Rogue River Middle School. Tyler Mitchell. Where's Tyler? I got to move slow because I can't move very fast. Shaden Mercino is here. Terry Schmidt is here, Joanne Jesse, and Kendall Strickland, and India Meisner, all from Rogue River Middle School. And I'd like courtesies extended, Mr. President. Thank you very much.
Recognize, without objection, we will now move on to the regular order of business under remonstrance. Recognize Senator Jackie Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, in the Jewish calendar, today is the 27th of Nisan, and it marks the Holocaust Remembrance Day for the year 5769. Today we remember the over 6 million victims of the Holocaust, among them Jews, Roma, the disabled, leftists, and sexual minorities. We remember not only those who were lost, but the elimination of a culture and people from Europe that dated back to the Roman times. We honor their memories, we vow never to forget, and we affirm our commitment to stand against future genocidal acts. Traditionally, today also remembers the Warsaw ghetto uprising in Poland. The uprising began on April 19, 1943, when between 200 and 600 lightly armed members of the Jewish Fighting Organization attacked Nazi forces in the ghetto of occupied Warsaw. Nazi forces numbered over 2,000, including armed units and special forces. Despite the overwhelming military strength of the Nazis, Jewish forces continued to fight until May 16th, when the last fighters were captured or killed. The uprising lives on as a testament to the will and determination of people to fight against the ultimate evil of their destruction. Colleagues, on a personal note, my mother-in-law, who is still alive today, she's 85, she's a Holocaust survivor. There aren't many left alive today to share their stories. She spent 7 years fighting for her life in Poland and Germany. First in the ghetto of Poland, where she was captive for many years. Next, she was shipped to as slave labor to German munition factories. And finally, she was shuttled between several concentration camps where she escaped during the final death march. She lost all of her immediate and extended family except for one sister, and unfortunately...
an absolute two-minute limit on remonstrances, and so that, I didn't mean to, it's all times interrupt, this is not an appropriate time for me, but I have to do that now. So I do apologize, Senator Dingfield, but that's what the situation is we have.
That's okay. Senator Walker will finish. I only had one more line.
Okay, Senator Walker, I will recognize you now, but I've been very liberal about that because I know remonstrances are very meaningful to each and every one of you, but we do have an absolute law, a rule, two-minute limits. Recognize Senator Walker, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I will finish this incredible story, and I want to recap. On a personal note, Senator Dingfelder's mother-in-law, who is 85 years old, is a Holocaust survivor. She lost all of her immediate extended family except for one sister. She spent several years fighting for survival, first in the ghetto in Poland, next in German munition factories, and finally in several concentration camps where she escaped during a death march. Senator Dingfelder asked that we observe a moment of silence to honor those lost in the Holocaust, Mr. President. Would we be able to do that today?
Excuse me, I was distracted. What did you ask?
Would
please?
We be able to ask for a moment of silence to honor those who lost their lives in the Holocaust?
Why don't I take that up after we get through remonstrances? Is that all right? Thank you.
Yes, thank
okay.
you.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Joanne Verger, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, in order to provide necessary services to our vulnerable citizens and provide an adequate education system, we must find new revenue. I believe we can have that new revenue, and I hope you will consider it. Our schools remain a top priority. The Common School Trust land, the Elliott Forest, resides in my district. The present harvest level on the Elliott is far below the sustainable yield, with little chance of increase allowed by the State Land Board. So if we're really looking for every way possible to get revenue, we should look at the appraised value of the Elliott Forest, which would bring in $400 million. In 1995, Mr. President, the assessment was $840 million. Invested by the Oregon Investment Council, the fund will only grow over time. So our failed judiciary obligation to manage those lands for maximum revenue would be solved once and for all, and the private landowner can come in and manage the land under the sensible regulations required by the state for private landowners. I know philosophically that this has been difficult to consider, but colleagues, we are facing the worst of times. Oregon's unemployment numbers are getting national attention. We are not managing the Elliott for maximum revenue, and we are incurring a big expense. So I thought things would change with an increased harvest with respect for good forest management and help the schools. So I say to you something I never thought I would say. Sell the Elliott and give your children and young people a decent education. The ship is sinking, and we have a wonderful resource that can be as productive as it was intended. Doing this is far better than adding taxes onto our struggling constituents. Thank you, Mr. President.
Recognize Senator Floyd Pazansky.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, first, standing up as the senator from Duckland, I want to congratulate OSU. I am wearing one of their ties today in celebration for them. It is a great land-grant school, but I also want to talk about another great land-grant school, and that's Texas A&M. Today is another meaningful day, as we've heard from other people, as to celebrations and time of remembrance. Today, Aggies across the world will be meeting in what's known as muster, and this is a time for former students to get together, to eat, to recount their days at Aggieland, and also to remember and respect those who have passed in the last year. The first of these celebrations started off as more of just a getting together and a camaraderie, and that was in 1883. And 1992 was the official was the year that the official day, April 21st, which is today, is and has been considered the day for muster for Aggies. It will be celebrated around the world. At Texas A&M, they will have over 12,000 individuals that will accumulate tonight at the one of the centers to have mustered there. And at that time, they will, in fact, pay respect to over 1,141 individuals who have passed on in this last year. I do want to mark four different names for here. Three of these individuals have just died in this last year, were soldiers that are serving our military. First Lieutenant Matthew Vandergraaf, class of 03, U.S. Marine Corps, died on April 21st, so last year on muster he was killed. First Lieutenant Timothy W. Cunningham, class of 04, U.S. Army, passed away April 23rd of last year. And the third individual is Lieutenant Zachary Cook, class of 08, Army, passed away January 12th of this year. We have one Oregonian who passed in the last year. Her name is Jackie Flanders Moser, class of 1990. Thank you.
Thank you again. I don't like to do that. Very embarrassing, but there is the time limit, so please, please, please help me with that. All right, I now would like to ask for a moment of silence, as requested Senator Walker, Senator Dingfelder, for all those who have lost in the Holocaust, please. Could we all stand, please, so we can observe a moment of silence, please. Thank you, Senator Dingfelder. Thank you, Senator Walker. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, Director of Speaker, one point has passed. House Bills 5045, 2067, 2221, 3077, adopted HCR 8, HJR 37, and HDM 20.
Reports from conference committees. Reports from standing committees. In accordance with SR 8.551, committee report summary number 71 is distributed to members today. This information recorded in the Journal of State's report. It is so ordered. Reports from special committees. Recognize Senator Ted Farioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Republicans have need of a caucus upstairs, 15 minutes prior to propositions and motions, Mr. President.
Recognize Senator Richard Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Democrats request 15-minute caucus in their caucus room.
The Senate will go into recess until about 11:05 by the digital clock on our scoreboards. The Senate is now in recess. Any senator will please come to order. The clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Bonamici, Boquist, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Devlin, Dingfelder, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, Ferrioli, George, George, Girard, Girard, Haas, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Cruz, Metzger, Mons Anderson, Mons Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Morse, Nelson, Nelson, Przonski, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Schrader, Starr, Starr, Telfer, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Walker, Whitsett, Whitsett, Winters, Winters, President Courtney.
He's here. A quorum is present. The Senate recessed following the order of reports from special committees and will resume under propositions and motions. So ordered. Proposition motion. The clerk will read the committee report and the minority report on House Bill 2201.
Senate committee report. President Courtney, your Committee on Commerce and Workforce Development, to whom it was referred, House Bill 2201, A engrossed, having had the same under consideration, respectfully reports it back, recommending do pass the A engrossed bill. Senate minority report. President Courtney, minority on your Committee of Workforce and Commerce Development, to whom was referred House Bill 2201A, having had the same under consideration, respectfully reports back, recommending do pass with amendments to the A engrossed bill, making it B engrossed.
Recognize Senator Dianne Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the committee report on House Bill 2201 be adopted.
Senator Rosenbaum has moved that the committee report on House Bill 2201 be adopted. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Explain the committee report, please. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, House Bill 2201A makes two changes to existing law. First, it modifies the statute to allow an additional quarter for corporate officers to request an exclusion from unemployment insurance coverage. And in the case of default, the Employment Department may hold a responsible corporate officer, a limited liability corporation member, partner or employee responsible for the unemployment insurance tax debt. And to give you a little background on this, current law requires that corporate officers of family-owned corporations make an election for exclusion from unemployment coverage in the quarter in which it is to become effective. If a new corporation does not set up its payroll reporting account until the month in which the first payroll report is due, it's already too late for the officers to opt out of the first quarter they are subject. The corporation has to report and pay taxes to the officer's remuneration for a single quarter, even if its intent is to exclude them from coverage. So this change will streamline the administration of the exclusion and make it easier for corporate officers to take advantage of the election. And then, under current law, the Employment Department does not have a collection source. If a corporation, limited liability corporation, or limited liability partnership ceases business with no assets, uncollectible debts are absorbed by the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund and become a socialized cost to be paid by other employers. This bill will allow the Employment Department to issue an assessment on the amount due to a responsible corporate officer, LLC member, LLP partner, or employee. The assessment on the individual is appealable. The fiscal impact is negligible, and it is estimated that Section 3 will create additional revenue for the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund of over $774,000, an additional penalty and interest revenue of $802,000 in the 2011-13 biennium. Colleagues, I urge your support.
Thank you, Senator Rosenbaum. Recognize Senator Chris Telfer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the minority report be substituted for the committee report on House Bill 2201.
Senator Chris Telfer has moved that the minority report be substituted for the committee report on House Bill 2201. To your motion, please.
Thank you. As a CPA, I have spent a lot of time over the years representing probably hundreds, if not thousands, of clients in dealing with their unemployment taxes, their and other payroll taxes. Currently, the federal government, through the Internal Revenue Service, can proceed against a responsible party to hold them personally liable for taxes, but only trust fund taxes. Trust fund taxes are those taxes that an employer withholds from an employee's paycheck so that they hold them in trust until they turn them over. So right now, the IRS can only hold a responsible party in personally liable for those taxes that are trust fund taxes. And in with that comes a lot of time in representing clients and fighting against who is, in fact, a responsible party. The committee's report on House Bill 2201A would allow the state to hold officers, employees, and partners responsible for nonpayment of their unemployment insurance, regardless of whether they were aware of the nonpayment or not. Unemployment taxes are not trust fund taxes. The minority report to House Bill 2201A amends the committee report to allow the state to hold any officer or partner liable only if they have actually been found guilty of a crime in connection of nonpayment of their unemployment tax, for example, through theft, embezzlement, fraud. Employees and employers can and should be held personally liable if they are found guilty of theft of the unemployment money. The minority report is about protecting employees, employers, and partners from the unscrupulous dealings of their colleagues in which they had no part. Unless you are guilty of a crime, you shouldn't be responsible for the crime. Another problem with House Bill 2201 as written is that many companies right now are facing the tough choice between employee salaries and unemployment tax. ORS 63.165 subsection 1 provides that a member or manager of a limited liability company is not personally liable for a debt, obligation, or liability of the LLC, whether arising in contract, tort, or otherwise, solely by reason of being or acting as a member or manager. Furthermore, under ORS 63.160, the Articles of Organization or any operating agreement of an LLC may eliminate or limit the liability of a member, manager, employee, or agent to the LLC or its members for damages due to that individual's acts or omissions. No provision, however, may eliminate or limit the liability or provide for indemnification of a member or manager for breaches of the duty of loyalty to the LLC or its members or for acts or omissions not in good faith that involve intentional misconduct or knowing violation of law for an unlawful distribution under ORS 63.235 or for any transaction from which the member or manager derives any personal, improper personal benefit. That's a quote right out of the statute. So, example, if a company has $30,000 cash on hand and $50,000 in bills, which is pretty much the situation with this current economic situation, is it a breach of duty to the business to pay the employees' salaries, health care benefits, and subcontractors so that a business can continue to operate? Or is it a breach of loyalty to your employees if you are trying to keep their families fed but can't afford all your financial obligations that month? In these economic times, many companies are having to make tough choices just like this one. Either way, until the courts have found a responsible officer, employee, or partner guilty of theft or embezzling, the state should not be able to hold all partners and employees personally liable. An individual should be held personally liable if they are found guilty of theft. However, if the business has to make tough choices without the motivation of personal gain or malfeasance, they should be able to work with the state to pay off their debts. Partners of a business should be held personally risk-free from the actions of another partner. Similarly, employees would be held personally harmless from a cheating boss. This is the purpose of a limited liability company or a limited liability partnership, to provide protections for employers and entrepreneurs. This bill does not interfere with the state's ability to collect unpaid unemployment taxes from the business. However, it will protect employees, employers, and partners from being held personally liable until the courts find a person guilty of a crime. This bill protects innocent employers and employees and enables them to keep their businesses running while holding the guilty partners responsible. And in closing, I'd like to declare a potential conflict in that as a CPA, I'm likely to earn a lot of money in defending clients as to who is a responsible party under 2201A as written.
Thank you, Senator. Hopefully, your potential conflict of interest has been placed on the record. Recognize Senator Ted Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, you just heard the only qualified CPA tell you that this is a potential mistake that we're about to make if we pass the main bill. This is a crosswalk bill, and people are going to get run over. Remember the crosswalk bills that we've written several times? Yes, Senator, I remember the crosswalk bills. This is Senate Bill 10 all over again. Unintended consequences. This is a narrow bill that sets a very wide precedent. You're going to hold people responsible without finding them guilty of anything, without due process. This will do for partnerships what Senate Bill 10 did for volunteers in government. It'll force people to rethink whether or not they want to go into business in the state of Oregon. A lot of people are going to make the decision to get out of business in the state of Oregon, perhaps not based on the narrow focus of this bill, based on the precedent that you will hold people responsible without due process. I urge you to listen to our colleague who has the training and understands the implications, and vote yes on the minority report. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Girard, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think we only need to go a few blocks from here, and there is a company called SunWest Management, which is over $1 billion in the hole, in which there's hundreds of lawsuits, and the investors there are going to lose most everything. I happen to be one of those investors. I'm a partner, and I'm a member in several LLCs. I stand to lose every nickel that I invested with that company. I stand to lose extra taxes that will become due if the bankruptcies go through. And now you're going to make me liable or potentially liable for the unpaid claims against workers' comp. So I'm sorry. I think that this is a terrible bill, and I will declare a personal conflict a potential conflict and probably most likely an overall conflict, that I have numerous LLCs that are going to be affected by this bill. This is a terrible, terrible bill for anybody that invests in this state.
Thank you, Senator Gerard. Your potential conflict of interest is noted for the record. Recognize Senator Dave Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to rise in support of this minority bill. And, you know, there's really no cloud of the fact that a minority report actually succeeds. I remember in one of my first sessions that I carried a banking bill, and the credit union just ran over me. Here I am speaking for the majority bill, and I get defeated. But the fact is, the explanation as given by the senator from Bend is very detailed, a very complex subject, something that she's very familiar with. And if we just vote this out on just a pure partisan vote, we're making a huge mistake. That's not what this body's all about. We should be making decisions for what is right. And here we have somebody with huge expertise. She was going through the explanation. I was thinking, man, I don't understand this thing, but I trust her to have the expertise to tell us what is really going to happen under this bill. And I think that the minority report should be supported. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Recognize Senator Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I rise in opposition to this minority report. By making this change, it really defeats the purpose of Section 3 of the bill and renders that change unnecessary. It's highly unlikely that a person who's convicted of a crime or theft related to the company's default would be a viable collection source, and therefore, colleagues, I urge you to vote no on the minority report.
Thank you, Senator Bevesma. Recognize Senator Larry George.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the minority report, colleagues, this is our last shot at this bill. It's a House bill. It came over to our committee. The good senator from Bend identified a huge issue, which happens to be one of the most important principles of the reason why we created corporate statutes, is to create a limited liability situation so that people are encouraged to bring their capital to our state and create jobs. I mean, that's the fundamental reason why we have regulations in the area of in creating the opportunity for corporations, LLCs, partnerships. This is our last chance to actually fix this bill. Think about this in your own mind. You are asked, because of some talents you have, to serve on a board of directors of a C corporation in the state of Oregon. You are asked to serve on that board because you have some expertise that they would like you to review. But if you sign up for that, this bill adds all kinds of operations liability to you personally. Here is the point that with the majority report is it pierces the corporate veil. The minority report maintains the intent of the bill but doesn't pierce that corporate veil. And the idea is if we have bad players, we need to punish them. But if we don't have bad players, if what we have are people who are operating a business that fails in the state of Oregon, they're not personally going to be held responsible. And I think this is a slippery slope. It seems like a small, innocuous bill, but it is a very big problem with the majority report that I think the good senator from Bend has figured out a way to solve, to accomplish the goal of the bill originally, but do it in a way that protects the business environment, especially when we're trying to draw capital to the state, and especially when we are trying to draw investment to create jobs in the state of Oregon. If we send a signal that we're going to pierce the corporate veil, then I think, folks, we should expect that the long-term attitude towards state is that we're going to have a negative business environment. This is a really key moment in the legislature because we have the opportunity with our last shot at a bill to correct it right here on the floor with this minority report, a thoughtful minority report, which will actually create a situation where we actually accomplish the goal, but we do it in a way that is friendly to those who may create jobs in the state of Oregon. Again, I'm going to say this again. This is our last opportunity. It's a House bill. It's our last opportunity to fix this piece of legislation. We can do it. We can do it in a bipartisan way by passing the minority report. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator George. Further discussion? No further discussion. Senator Telford, would you like to close on your motion?
Thank you, Mr. President. There's a reason we have limited liability companies, limited liability partnerships, and corporations that have limited liabilities. That's to protect people from certain acts. I want to read from the, some legal opinion that says that House Bill 2201A imposes personal liability regardless of whether the officer or employee breached the duty to perform the actions required under ORS Chapter 657 or whether the officer's or employee's conduct culpably resulted in the default in the Employment Department would be seeking to collect. I ask you to stand by current statute and have this one represent what currently is an Oregon statute.
The Senator Devlin has demanded a call of the Senate. He's joined by Senator Ferrioli and Senator Rosenbaum. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, and the Sergeant of Arms will attend. The clerk will call the roll, please.
Atkinson. Bates. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Haas. Johnson. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Juan Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Verger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. President Courtney.
All members that are subject to the call are present. We're now voting on the minority report. The question now arises upon the substitution of the minority report for the committee report. All those in favor will answer aye as the names are called, and those opposed, no. Could the clerk please call the roll?
George. Gerard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Metzger. Juan Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Verger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. President Courtney.
No.
Excused. Carter. Voting no. Bates. Bonamici. Burdick. Devlin. Dingfelder. Haas. Johnson. Metzger. Montes-Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Verger. Walker. President Courtney. 12 ayes.
The minority report has failed. In accordance with SR 8.602, the Senate will take action immediately on the third reading of House Bill 2201 as amended by the committee report. The clerk will read the bill, please. Recognize Senator Morissette, please. For what purpose do you? He does not. He waves off his light. Go ahead.
House Bill 2201, relating to Unemployment Insurance Administration.
Recognize Senator Rosenbaum, please.
Colleagues, we discussed House Bill 2201. It makes two simple changes to the law, simply allowing an additional quarter for corporate officers to request an exclusion from UI coverage, and then in the case of default, the Employment Department can hold a responsible corporate officer, LLC member, LLP, partner, or employee responsible for the unemployment insurance tax debt. This is a good bill, colleagues. I urge your aye vote.
We're now under discussion. Recognize Senator Larry George, please.
colleagues, again, I would urge a no vote on this bill. And the reason really comes down to this is that what we're talking about here is a fundamental change about how we approach businesses in the state. It's a slippery slope argument here, and it's legitimate. If we have corporate officers that breach fiduciary duty, then they should be pursued. And I think that the two minority members on the committee agreed with that. The problem we have here is that this bill has huge implications, and it has huge implications about the message it sends to the entire country about bringing capital here. How do I go to somebody who may be an expert in some field of a business I'm related to and who may live in New York and ask them to serve on my board of directors, or they may have some expertise in green energy and they live in California and I want them to come and serve on my board of directors here in the state of Oregon on a renewable energy company that's established here. Think about this. They would incur all types of personal liability that goes far beyond anything we've done before. And the reason I'm saying this is because you got to understand the chilling effect this will have for businesses in the state of Oregon. Unfortunately, I think we can get to a bill that would be to get to the goal of what the majority wants. But this is definitely not it. And again, this is our last chance to defeat this bill before it goes out there and creates longer-term problems. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Gerard.
Thank you, Mr. President. Tomorrow, there's going to be one of our lobbyists throw a party for the turkey bill of the session, and this will be my nomination.
Recognize Senator Chris Telfer, please.
Thank you. This bill... this has kind of a Gestapo flavor to it. It's not only that, it's not fair and equitable. If, in fact, you have two partners that are held as responsible parties, they both get assessed 100% of the tax. Both of them do. If one partner has assets and the other one doesn't, one partner may end up paying all of the taxes. This bill isn't even fair and equitable, much less its far-reaching authority into the lives of individuals. I urge you again to vote no on this bill.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further discussion on the measure? Recognize Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just echoing the concerns of my colleagues, I just want to point out the fact that here in the state of Oregon, we're at 12.1% unemployment. And is this the kind of message we want to be sending to employers or potential employers in our state? There's a reason, Mr. President, why we're the second highest unemployment state in the nation, second only behind Michigan. It's policies like this. I urge a no vote.
Thank you, Senator Starr. Recognize further discussion? There's no further discussion. Senator Rosenbaum, do you wish to close? Senator Rosenbaum, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Senator Devlin has demanded a call to the Senate. He's joined by Senator Rosenbaum. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, and the sergeant-at-arms will attend. The clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson.
Here.
Bates.
Here.
Bonamici.
Here.
Boquist.
Here.
Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli.
Here.
George.
Here.
Gerard, Hass, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Brzezinski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Verger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
He is here.
All members subject to the call are present.
All members subject to the call are present. The question now arises upon the third reading and the final passage of House Bill 2201. To those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass, will answer aye as the names are called. Those opposed, no. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Gerard.
No.
Hass.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Cruz.
Aye.
Metzger.
Aye.
Wines Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse.
No.
Nelson.
No.
Brzezinski. Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Schrader.
Aye.
Starr.
No.
Telfer.
No.
Berger.
No.
Walker. Whitsett. Winters.
No.
Atkinson.
No.
Bates.
Aye.
Bonamici.
Aye.
Boquist.
No.
Burdick.
Aye.
Carter. Devlin.
Aye.
Dingfelder.
Aye.
Ferrioli.
No.
George.
No.
President Courtney.
Yes.
Excused. Carter. Voting no. Atkinson. Boquist. Ferrioli. George. Girard. Cruz. Morse. Nelson. Starr. Telfer. Verger. Whitsett. Winters. 16 ayes.
The House Bill 2201, having received a constant majority, is declared passed. Action on executive appointments requiring the Senate confirmation. Introduction of the first reading of Senate measures. The second reading of Senate measures.
SJR 39, recognizing honoring Pendleton Roundup Centennial Celebration. Senate Bill 217 related to Historic Preservation Revolving Loan Fund and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 571 related to fish. Senate Bill 578 related to all-terrain vehicle safety and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 862 related to reimbursement of health care costs and declaring emergency. House Bill, Senate Bill 871 related to installation of security measures, property money, and declaring emergency.
To pass the calendar. The third reading of Senate measure, the clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 5514 related to financial administration of DCBS and declaring emergency.
Recognize Senator Rob Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, yesterday we passed Senate Bill 5513. This is the related fee bill. What this bill does is to ratify fee increases that were already adopted by administrative rule by the Department of Consumer and Business Services during the last interim. These were approved by the Department of Administrative Services. If this measure fails, the state law would require that fee increases that were adopted administratively be rescinded, and this agency would be unable to function. The Ways and Means Committee reduced the short-term lender applicant or license fee from the recommended $1,200 to $750 as a result of information provided by the agency, finding that there would be sufficient revenues barely to continue to support the program for the next biennium. I would urge your aye vote.
Now rise upon the question. Now rise upon the third reading, the final passage of Senate Bill 5514. Those opinion bills are passed, say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger, Wons Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Brzezinski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, President Courtney.
Yes.
Excused. Carter, voting no. Atkinson, Boquist, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Cruz, Morse, Nelson, Starr, Telfer, Whitsett, Winters, 17 ayes.
The Senate Bill 5514, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 5527, relating to Pension Administration and Society Boards, and declaring emergency.
Recognize Senator Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. Senate Bill 5527 is the budget bill for seven tiny health-related licensing boards that are all lumped together. These boards license and regulate people like dietitians, mortuary and cemetery services, naturopathic physicians, occupational therapists, radiological technicians, speech-language pathologists and audiologists, and veterinary medical service providers. The boards are supported with other funds from the applicant for examination and license fees. Subcommittee ratified a 25% increase in the already administratively adopted fee for radiologic technicians. The fee had not been adjusted for 11 years and is required to maintain sufficient operating funds for this small agency. Subcommittee approved a total budget for all of these boards of just under $4 million with 16.7 FTE. This is a net increase of about 10% all other funds. Most of the budget increase is related to workload. Inspector position was restored in the Mortuary and Cemetery Board because they weren't able to do their job and there was a lot of problems with that board. Position had been eliminated, so it's a restoration of a position that had been eliminated when they were having problems. They have a new administrator today and they're cleaning up their act. An investigator position in the Veterinary Medical Examining Board was increased by half FTE. Board of Naturopathic Examiners received funding for a half-time temporary investigator to help them catch up with their workload, with instructions to report to the e-board during the interim on workload and see whether or not that half-time temporary investigator was needed or should be terminated. This bill passed the Ways and Means, full Ways and Means Committee on a vote of 15-6. Your Education Subcommittee and the full Ways and Means Committee recommend it be amended out and with a due pass. Thank you.
A discussion on the measure. The question now arises upon the third reading, the final passage of Senate Bill. Are you going to make a call or not, Senator? Senator Devlin has demanded a call of the Senate, joined by Senator Walker and Senator Burdick. Doorkeepers will bar the doors, and the Sergeant Arms will attend. The clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Girard. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Bonnes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Prozonsky. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters.
Yes, she is.
President Courtney.
He's here. All members subject to the call are present. Question arises upon third reading the final passage. Of Senate Bill 5527. Those opinion bills passed, say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Johnson.
Aye.
Cruz. Cruz. Metzger. Bonnes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Prozonsky. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Hass. President Courtney.
Yes.
Excused. Carter. Voting no. Atkinson. Boquist. Ferrioli. George. Girard. Cruz. Morse. Nelson. Starr. Telfer. Whitsett. 18 ayes.
The Senate Bill 5527 have received a constitutional majority declared passed. Clerk reads the bill, please.
Senate Bill 48, relating to sexual offenses involving students, declare an emergency.
Recognize Senator Prozonsky, please. Senator Prozonsky, carrying this bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Bill 48 is brought to you out of the to the Judiciary Committee. It came out on a 5-0 vote. Basically, what we're doing here, Mr. President, we're closing the loophole. Currently, the Teacher Standard and Practices Commission has a duty to actually revoke a license of a teacher or service personnel when they've been convicted of certain type of offenses that involve young children in their wards, the age up to 16. After reviewing this, it came to our attention, and we decided that what we needed to do is also take care of those individuals who aren't actually convicted but have been engaged in this conduct. And so based on the preponderance of the evidence, if the TSPC, again being the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, determines that that type of conduct had occurred with a student that is in 12th grade or younger, that they should in fact have their license revoked, and most importantly that they are not going to be able to get relicensed, and that that information will be public for disclosure so they cannot go to another state and be able to be relicensed based on the conduct that they have been found to participate in our state. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? Question on the third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 48. Those opinion bills passed the aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Cruz. Metzger. Bonas Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przonski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Verger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Hass. Johnson.
Aye.
President Courtney.
You say yes.
Excused. Carter. 29 ayes.
Senate Bill 48, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Recognize Senator Doug Whitsett, please.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Excuse me, we haven't read the bill yet, so we recognize Senator Doug Whitsett, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think Senate Bill, vote explanation, please.
Please file your vote explanation.
I think Senate Bill 48A is a good bill. Mr. President, TSP, in my opinion, is too poorly managed to allow this bill to be effectuated very well. The Commission's backlog of work and its failure to prioritize cases give me no confidence that this bill will be effective in the way it's passed. And that has nothing to do with the bill, it has to do with the agency. The revocation of license may require many months if TSP's past performance is indicative of its future performance. So I reluctantly support the bill because I think it's a good bill, but I think with the agency that's enforcing it, I'm afraid that it won't work very well, and that I have the same concern about the next bill as well. Thank you.
Your vote explanation is noted for the record. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 123, Land Child Abuse Records and Court Emergency.
Recognize Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission needs to have the best information available when making licensing decisions about educators. Currently, it's difficult for the TSPC to obtain information from the Department of Human Services, particularly information about cases involving child abuse. Under Senate Bill 123A, the Department of Human Services must make records related to the reporting of child abuse available to TSPC on preliminary investigation of a complaint if the investigation involves a child or student in grades 12 or below. The bill also requires that the records are to be kept confidential. Please join me in helping to keep Oregon's children safe in school by voting aye on Senate Bill 123A. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Further discussion? Question now rise upon the third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 123. Those opinion bills passed. Say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Metzger. Bonas Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przonski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Verger. Walker. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, President Courtney, excused, Carter, 29 ayes.
The Senate Bill 123, have Chief Counsel Majority declared passed. Clerk reads the bill.
Senate Bill 348, relating to safety of school sports and court emergency.
Recognize Senator Bill Morissette.
Yes, I have it. colleagues, Senate Bill 348 comes to you from the Committee on Education and General Government. It requires that school districts ensure that coaches receive annual training on recognizing symptoms of a concussion and how to seek proper medical treatment. It also charges the State Board of Education with establishing related rules. Colleagues, this bill came about because of an injury to Max Conrad, who suffered traumatic brain injury while playing football at Walport High School in 2001. He complained of headaches after taking several hard hits. 8 days later, while playing in another game, he collapsed. His mother called the doctor in Florence. They lived in Yahats, and described the symptoms, and the doctor said, well, he does have a possible concussion, and you should follow the procedures that the coach has for concussions. Well, apparently the coach did not have procedures, and Max played a week later, took some more hard hits, was unconscious for 4 months, has permanent traumatic brain injury. That's a lifetime condition. On your desk, I put some information about sports concussion. It's a fact sheet. It's very well organized, and it talks about how common concussions are, talks about football injuries, which are one of the major contributing factors. Talked about mandatory helmet retirement. The bill originally dealt with helmets that might need to be retired and purchase new helmets, but that was taken out because of a concern for the fiscal to the school districts. However, I'm assuming that coaches will at least inspect the helmets for cracks and so on to see if they're in decent shape. In fact, the football coach at Springfield High School, Skip Raish, said that in 40 years he's never had a concussion, and he routinely checks helmets and he routinely looks at the pre-concussion condition of students. They do a pre-examination and a post-concussion, if there are any, and he's never had a concussion on his teams in the last 41 years. Part of the problem is that coaches do not follow procedure that's recommended to them, and may I use a visual, please?
Please feel free to do so.
This is a kit that's provided by the CDC, Center for Disease. And what it has in it, there's a lot of information for coaches, and each coach in the country at one point was given this free packet. In Oregon, they've received this, but they may not follow it. This bill would require that coaches follow this training, follow the recommendations by the CDC, and the OSAA would oversee this, and the Department of Education would oversee it. The sheet that I gave you is interesting because it talks about a lot of the conditions, the recovery from concussion. On the back of it, it talks about why girls are hurt more than boys in some sports. After football, which is a boy sport, women's soccer is the highest risk game for whatever reason, unless it, maybe it has to do with headers. It also describes on here why girls get hurt more than boys, and it has to do with the rigidity of the way they land. Now, you know, if you watch girl basketball games these days, I don't think they're, you know, that's a whole different athletic feat that they're very proficient at, so I don't know if it is rigidity. There's an interesting section here that talks about what happens medically when you have a concussion to your brain, which is interesting to read. Cognitive symptoms, physical symptoms, emotional symptoms, and the conclusion is that we have to be much more careful, much more aware, take precautions, and make sure that kids are safe while they're playing all sports. So this is a good bill, and I'd appreciate an aye vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Bates. Dr. Alan Bates.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll speak more as a doctor real quickly on this bill than I will as a senator. In my 30 years as being the doctor for several football teams in Southern Oregon, this is the area in which I had the most conflict with coaches. It was a chronic problem. When your star athlete is down with a head injury that's minor or appears to be minor, and you want to get him back in the game or back in the field within a week or two, it gets to be a real conflict, and it actually is a very important one. I think we all remember the commercial a few years ago where the quarterback is down on the ground looking up and the coach is looking down, and they ask him, where are you? And he tells him, and what day is it? He tells him, and then he says, who are you? And he says, Batman. Well, that happens a lot out there in those fields, and nothing to degrade the Springfield coach, but if he hasn't had a concussion on the football field in 41 years, he's missed some concussions. These can be very, very subtle. And for the record, and more importantly for rules making on this, the most important part of this bill is not the obvious severe head injury that occurs in the field at that moment. It's the continuation of some very subtle, very, very subtle symptoms that occur for weeks, months, or years afterwards that should prevent an athlete from going back out on the field. We all remember quarterbacks in the NFL who have been taken off the field for years at a time because they have recurrent headaches. They are susceptible to a second concussion, which can cause them to lose their life or end up with Parkinson's or other severe mental disorders at a later time because of repetitive hits to the head. So, good bill, well written. I reviewed it. But for a time when the rulemaking comes in, I want them to really emphasize the need to keep these kids, the young men, young women, off the field if they have any symptoms whatsoever that suggest a concussion. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Jason Atkinson.
Mr. President, I won't speak long, but I do want to add my support to this bill. This is an issue that goes far beyond football. Actually, in recent years, we have seen this issue being taken up by many ski coaches, cycling coaches, and also coaches in the fields of equestrian. So this is more than just a small issue. This is actually a very important issue that has touched my life and the lives of several friends of mine who have suffered through head injuries. So I would heartily urge an aye vote.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I listened to the testimony about this bill, and I rise in support. And just one point I wanted to make, that there is a lot of pressure sometimes from teammates, families, even the player himself or herself to get back in the game. And I think this bill, colleagues, will help coaches to be able to say, you can't, it isn't because of the pressure, it's because the law says that I need to give you some time to recover. So I think this is going to help to give coaches that guidance and tool that they need to help keep players safe and recover before they go back into the game. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Bonamici, further discussion? Senator Morissette, do you wish to close? He does not. The question now rises upon a third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 348. Those opinion bills will pass. The aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morris. Morris. Nelson. Przonski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. President Courtney. Excused. Carter, 29 ayes.
The Senate Bill 348, having received a council majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 579, with motor vehicle safety.
Recognize Senator Rick Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I rise in support of Senate Bill 579A. It comes to you from your Senate Business and Transportation Committee. Senate Bill 579A requires the use of seatbelts and safety restraint systems for children younger than 16 in motor vehicles, including Class 1 and Class 2 all-terrain vehicles, if the manufacturer equips those vehicles with a safety restraint system and does so on operating on premises open to the public. The offense of failure to properly use seatbelts and or safety systems is a Class D traffic violation. This is another in the series of bills brought to us by the Oregon Recreational Coalition, those who enjoy with their families using recreational vehicles. It applies only to those who are 15 year and under. It's an idea, again, of protecting our kids, and I urge an aye vote.
Thank you, Senator Metzger. Discussion. Question now rise upon a third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 579. Those opinion bills pass the aisle. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przonski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dinkfelder. Perioli. George. Girard. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Juanes Anderson. President Courtney.
Yes.
Excused. Carter. Voting no. Atkinson. Boquist. Perioli. George. Girard. Cruz. Morse. Nelson. Telfer. Whitsett, Winters, 18 ayes.
The Senate Bill 579, having received a constant majority, is declared passed. I will carry over the remainder of the third reading of Senate measures until tomorrow's calendar, which is Wednesday, April 22nd. First reading of House measures, please. Recognize Senator Ferrioli, please. 1 second. What purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, at your convenience and without objection, I'd like to go back to remonstrance.
Can we do? All right. Thank you. Let's move through the calendar, and just before we go to the announcements, we'll go to the remonstrances, please. Would you read the first reading of the House measures, please?
HGR 8, Memoriam Lynn Maureen England, 1949 to 2008. HJM 20, Urging Congress to enact legislation concerning Medicare reimbursement rates. HJR 37, designating Dungeness Crab as official crustacean of Oregon. House Bill 5045, Lynn Financial Administration and Real Estate Agency in a current emergency. House Bill 2067, Lynn Sunset Tax of Credits. House Bill 2221, Lynn Feral Swine. House Bill 3077, Lynn Elective Sheriff's Private Spouses.
These are transferred to the President's referral. Second reading of House measures. Third reading of House measures. The third reading of House measures calendar will be carried over until tomorrow's calendar, April 22nd, which is on a Wednesday. Other versions of the Senate, in accordance with SR 8.403, committee referral list number 94, which is distributed to members April 16th, and number 95, which is distributed April 20th. The referrals will be recorded in the Journal of State Report and so ordered. Recognize Senator Ted Ferrioli. Without objection, we'll return to the order of remonstrances, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll make this brief. On your desk, colleagues, there is a little excerpt from the Democrat newspaper in Baker County, the Record Courier, established in 1901, first published in Haines, Oregon. And as you can see from the photograph, these two wolves killed 23 lambs in Keating. And, Mr. President, I just wanted to point out that this is a real and serious issue. It's got a lot of folks on the east side of the state extremely concerned, not only for their livestock, but for their families. I just wanted to bring this picture to your attention. When the attack was first documented, there was a strong argument from the environmental community that this wasn't wolves, this was coyotes, or dogs, or bears. And so the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and others put a camera over the lambs, and the two wolves in the picture make it unequivocally certain that it's wolves that are killing livestock in eastern Oregon. Mr. President, this is a difficulty, another challenge for rural families to face at a time when we have very high unemployment, every dollar counts. Ag employment is down like every other sector. This is just another very serious challenge for Eastern Oregon. By our policy, Mr. President, we encourage wolves in Oregon. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Ferrioli. We'll now turn to the regular order of business, which is under announcements. Are there any announcements? Recognize Senator Richard Devlin, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Democrats, get your lunch and come to caucus. 12:15.
Senator Ferrioli.
Mr. President, Republicans will caucus as usual in the third floor caucus room. Get your lunches and proceed with all possible dispatch.
Is there any further announcements for the Senate? If there are no further announcements, and without objection, the Senate is adjourned until 10:15 tomorrow, Wednesday, April 22nd. The Senate is adjourned.